This video is sponsored by Blinkist. Emile Cioran was a writer and philosopher born in 1911 in what is present-day Roșnari, Romania. He is renowned for his penetratingly dark, nihilistic, yet beautiful writing style, considered by many to be one of the great writers of despair, building his philosophical arguments off the somber, emotional rhythm of his prose, often expressing shocking thoughts and dark humor, nearly every sentence and passage hung down from the very heights of despair. Born into a socially and spiritually volatile time of Western history, somewhere in the middle of the increasing disintegration of traditional religious ideology and the newly emerging philosophical movements of existentialism, idealism, and other pessimistic schools of thought, Cioran would find himself positioned on the face of a mountain that humanity was desperately trying to get over. And from his view, he saw nothing. A deathly climb to another valley of nowhere. At a fairly young age, Cioran would become a heavy reader, going on to study literature and philosophy at the University of Bucharest, a public university in Romania. Here he would study and read the works of philosophers like Immanuel Kant, Friedrich Nietzsche, Arthur Schopenhauer, Lev Shestov, Hegel, and many others. At 23, he would publish his first book, titled On the Heights of Despair, which would soon go on to receive controversial but mostly positive critical acclaim, achieving him 2 notable awards and setting him on the path to soon become an internationally recognized writer and thinker. In this first work, not only did Cioran reveal his promising young intellectual mind, but also what would go on to become the recurring, lifelong themes and obsessions of his work. Themes like despair, suffering, social isolation, absurdity, futility, failure, decay, and death. Written out of a spell of horrible insomnia, this first book would provide a foretelling of what awaited Cioran, a lifelong exploration of the underbelly of the human condition, fueled by a depression-infused insomniac lifestyle. I've never been able to write otherwise than in the midst of the depression brought about by my nights of insomnia, Cioran writes. For 7 years, I could barely sleep. I need this depression, and even today before I sit down to write, I play a disc of gypsy music from Hungary. Like many great writers and artists, Cioran felt as though he had to write. It was not as if he made his work sad, but that his sadness made his work. In the moments of depression, writing was, according to him, his only therapy. His first book and the 20-plus others of his to come, according to Cioran, saved him from what might have otherwise seemed like the logical conclusion to much of his work. If nothing else, this aspect of his work and life reveals a profound insight into the potency of the creative process. That even in writing about the futility and meaninglessness of life and its endeavors, the power of the creative process can, in some sense, save the writer from the very substance and content of their own work, paradoxically making the futility and meaninglessness that they discuss somewhat less futile and meaningless. After leaving Romania for the last time in 1940, Cioran would end up living the majority of his life in Paris. He would go on to produce upwards of 20 books written in both Romanian and French, keeping the same eloquence, wit, and intensity throughout. His work would increasingly develop and maintain him a highly respected reputation amongst the prominent French intellectual scene, garnering the admiration of high-ranking philosophical peers, as well as a large following of readers across the world. Despite this, he would live a very modest private life, going to great lengths to avoid any and all accolades and any way of life that would otherwise be considered ordinarily successful. In 1995, at the age of 84, Cioran died after having developed Alzheimer's several years prior. Slowly but surely, one of the most eloquent minds of the 20th century lost all relationship with words, and then experienced the main theme of his life's work firsthand. In terms of Cioran's philosophy, despite his work being unmistakably perceptive and intelligent, he is somewhat interesting and perhaps debatable in the context of a philosopher. For the most part, traditional philosophical work is almost always grounded in a particular system of thought, which is formed or integrated first as a foundation and then logically built on from there. Cioran's work, however, does not really start from nor integrate any real system of this form. Rather, it relies more on his aphoristic, observational writing style, which seems to almost philosophize and reveal metaphysical ideas through the emotionally tense, subjective, and chaotic reading experience alone, without much consideration for logical structure or systematic reasoning. Seeing as how a key part of Cioran's philosophy is that he disagreed with the premise of reason and traditional philosophy as a means of resolving life and explaining its reasonlessness, this approach arguably makes sense. To adequately argue for a philosophy of absurdity and reasonlessness, what better way is there than to write without priority for structure or reason? And in this sense, perhaps it would be more accurate to say that Chiron is sort of an anti-philosophy philosopher, which perhaps nonetheless is, ironically, still a philosophy. According to what can be surmised of Chiron's views, it is more or less death specifically that both causes the futility of life and poses the inevitable limit to all reason within it. However, in his most famous work, The Trouble with Being Born, he discusses how since death necessarily follows from birth, it is actually the memory of our birth that is the tragic problem of life, and not death in and of itself. The attempt to reason an understanding or solution to the conscious awareness of death stemming from birth is thus both the driving force of philosophy, religion, and science, and simultaneously their collapsing force, the unbeatable opponent under which all reason, logic, and human effort crumble. And consequently, any philosophical attempt to do so, for Chiron, can only be a contemplation on failure. Broadly speaking, this concept would also become a fundamental tenet of his philosophy, often underpinning his ideas on the notion that human endeavors are almost always synonymous and fated with failure. What his work also seemed to parallel alongside this dread and nihilism, though, is the notion of accepting and playing into the absurdity of it all, loving the absurd uselessness for what it is, how it is, and using it against itself, and living anyway. In the words of Chiron, when all the current reasons, moral, aesthetic, religious, social, and so on, no longer guide one's life, how can one sustain life without succumbing to nothingness? Only by a connection with the absurd, by love of absolute uselessness, loving something which does not have substance, but which simulates an illusion of life. I live because the mountains do not laugh, and the worms do not sing. It is in this dive into the absurdity that Chiron seems to pose the question, can those who accept and embrace failure and disaster ever really fail or be struck by either? Pessimism, in this sense, almost serves as a trump card, the last true failure being the failure of optimism. From there, we become, as he put it, invincible victims. There is a certain unique and important quality to the irony of Chiron's work. As a sort of anti-philosophy philosopher who argued that life cannot be made or reasoned into any sort of reconciliation or meaningful benefit, he nonetheless did so by philosophizing, at least in some form. Nihilism, of which he is generally associated, denies the value of all things. But can a nihilist philosophy be expressed as a philosophy and remain a nihilist philosophy? In other words, can the premise and conclusion be that life is inherently meaningless and that endeavoring and seeking reason is entirely futile, while simultaneously making this meaningful claim through creative action and, albeit subversive, providing reasons for it? Discussing or creatively expressing the notion that all is meaningless and void of reason is itself a creation of meaning out of the void, motivated by the very void of reason. The process of forming meaning, it seems, can perhaps not be escaped, even by one of the greatest so-called nihilists. And perhaps then, at bottom, Chiron is never really declaring true nihilism. There is the more obvious reading of Chiron, and perhaps others like him, that can reasonably come off as if it was created by someone who outright hates life and lives with a constant bitterness towards everyone and everything. But there is also another read that seemingly reveals a paradoxical reverence and embrace of life. Although Chiron might not have explicitly agreed with this, to speak of life with such candor in the way he did, to think it is worthy to be spoken of at all, to refuse to lie to it or about it, despite how dark or bleak it might be, perhaps suggests a certain hidden, but nonetheless, deep admiration and acceptance of it. When asked once why he writes about such dismal topics in the way he does, Chiron said, "Everything that is formulated becomes more tolerable." His work, time and time again, demonstrates this, revealing the perhaps vile and horribly unresolvable qualities of life while simultaneously revealing the potential for redemption contained inside them, a worthiness of enduring, of thinking, of writing, of living life. Cursed with the gift of consciousness, we are all inescapably forced into the beautiful confrontation of the void and the absurd inevitability of creating meaning and somethingness out of it. Chiron's work is likely not for everyone, but for those whom it is likely with a great degree. As all art and literature arguably should, his work attempts to reflect, with as much brute earnestness as possible, the things most of us know and feel, but are often too scared or unsure to not only talk about, but think about. He was one of the rare explorers willing, or perhaps forced, into traveling through the depths of hell and heights of despair, and then tell about it. Perhaps Tron's work can be seen simply as a collection of life-refusing nihilistic thoughts, or perhaps it can also be seen as an embodiment of the irrational but no less potent force of human creative consciousness at work, its ability to meaningfully endure even its own horrible conditions. And in this, in his work's arguably successful confrontation and embracing of the sad, hopeless, and absurd parts of life, it serves as an enduring and important connection point into these often hidden but deeply shared human experiences, reminding us that we aren't so alone and reassuring us with the comforting notion that I'm simply an accident. Why take it all so seriously? Emile Turan. This video was sponsored by Blinkist. Perhaps one of the hardest parts in developing and maintaining consistent, strong reading habits is sifting through the sheer amount of quality nonfiction books available out there. The book summary service Blinkist makes this much easier by condensing complete books down into around 15-minute summaries, providing their main ideas and key takeaways in a convenient amount of time. Hitting just about anyone's interests, Blinkist covers thousands of nonfiction books in subjects spanning from different areas of philosophy and psychology, to science and technology, to productivity and art, and much more. If you're interested in topics related to psychology or the creative process, Blinkist has a great selection of titles, including The Blank Slate by Steven Pinker, which explores an evolutionary psychology view of human nature, and Flow by Mihai Csikszentmihalyi, which explores the conditions and functions of creativity as well as its role in dealing with anxiety and meaninglessness. Blinkist not only makes it easier and more efficient to consume books' information, but can also help save you time when determining if a book or author is what you are looking for prior to reading the full version, or perhaps refreshing yourself on a book after. All book summaries can be read or listened to conveniently within the Blinkist app, and for books that you find you are more interested in, you can now purchase the complete audiobook versions for certain titles directly within the app as well. The first 100 people to use the link in the description will receive one free week of unlimited access, as well as 25% off a premium membership. The free 7-day trial can be canceled at any time within the trial period. If you're interested, please visit blinkist.com/pursuitofwonder or click the link in the description below. And of course, thank you so much for watching in general, and see you next video.